art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Seed of wisdom, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. As I mentioned at the beginning of the homily, thank you for coming, because as you see, we had to change the date. Next Sunday I'm leaving for Rome on business, and I won't be back from Europe until the beginning of October, so much so that we again will have to change the October 2nd class. I will still be out of town on the 2nd. Our next class, therefore, will be October the 9th. So once more, our next class, same time, a Latin class beforehand, followed by Mass, then our regular sessions on October the 9th. Sunday, second Sunday of October. With my apologies, I assure you the work that I'm doing, including, by the way, coming here, is not just my idea. It is the churches telling me, especially the Holy See, to become involved and to train lay people in the faith. You are the hope of the church, and that is not a pious cliche. Once more then, our next class will be the second Sunday of October, October the 9th. This semester we're having, as we did have last semester, two classes. The first class will be on the catechism, and the second class will be in church history. You should have received Zox pages from, I believe the name is pronounced Laux, L-A-U-X. It's a standard, not too sophisticated, history of the Catholic Church.
Father, some of us could not receive those. Would you
see that everyone has received?
No, some did not, Father.
There are more, by the way. Kathleen is just doing more copies. You won't need them for the first class. You will, however, need them for the second class. You will receive in time the full complement of all the pages covering the history of the church from the rise of Protestantism, which these pages are all about. This is a very close and concise synthesis of the rise of Protestantism in the Western world. You'll then receive the rest of the pages, some 200 plus, covering the church up to modern times. There are more to say about this when we take this class, beginning after we finish the first one on the catechism. Regarding the catechism, what I am planning to do, and you already received a one-page outline of the sections of the forthcoming book about which I've already spoken, with certain publications is coming out with. As a matter of fact, the editor from the publishing house will be here to pick up the pages which I have proofread today. They'll be here in an hour, and I brought with me the pages for them. What I'm going to do is give you the outline of the material to be covered. I want all of you to have a copy of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. How many, by the way, may I ask, still need a copy? Relics. Very good. I believe Kathleen has some copies left. In any case, I want all of you to have a copy of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Now, the course itself will concentrate on part one, which is the most extensive part of the Catechism, namely on the Apostles' Creed. What I've done is, I believe I've already told you last semester, using the French edition, which is the base that we are following, I assembled a 1300 question and answer catechism based on the Catechism of the Catholic Church. This is now finally the approved English translation. What we will do in class, therefore, is cover first a large introductory section before the Apostles' Creed is gone into in detail. Then, one after another of the 12 articles of the Apostles' Creed. We just do not have adequate time for everything, obviously, covered even in that large first section. And consequently, you are invited, strongly invited, as soon as certain publication comes out with, we're calling it a handbook for the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And Doubleday, a publisher of my other catechisms, including the question and answer Catholic Catechism, when they heard that certain publications was coming out of the book to be called Question and Answer Catechism of the Catholic Church, their lawyers wrote here to another, "Don't you dare. If you do, you're going to have a lawsuit on your hands." So certain publication very obediently changed the title. Of course, I got a lawyer too. In any case, the title has been changed. I'm not even sure of the exact title. It's something like Handbook of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It should be in print by next month. You are encouraged to get a copy of that book as soon as it comes out from certain publications here in Ann Arbor. My plan in class is to cover as many of the questions and answers as we have time for, covering, I repeat, all the preliminary section introducing the Apostles' Creed and then the 12 articles of the Creed themselves. All the rest of the material that we cannot cover in class, then I'm expecting you to learn on your own from reading the textbook, or shall I say textbooks. Now, one book would be enough. My own book, as I've been saying, is a synthesis of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And Cardinal Hickey of Washington wrote a beautiful foreword introducing this book coming out next month, encouraging all Catholics in America to get a copy, for which, of course, I'm grateful. That, then, is the plan for this first course, namely, on the Catechism of the Catholic Church. We will cover part one, which is on the Apostles' Creed. The amount of matter is an ocean. And even to the Catechism itself, I'm in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, it is several hundred pages in print. That is why, both to save time and, of course, knowing my faith, I think perhaps a little better than average, having worked with the commission that produced the Catechism of the Catholic Church. I thought a compendium, a synthesis, in the least possible number of words, would be helpful for those who are going to use the Catechism, both for themselves and especially for teaching others. Before we go any further, let me tell you, as I've said before, but I can now say with even more emphasis, a large segment of the catechetical establishment in the United States is not promoting and will not promote the Catechism of the Catholic Church. In other words, in countries like the United States, which have been so deeply secularized, the knowledge of what is in the Catechism of the Catholic Church will depend in large measure on the faithful themselves, the bishops, who are now deeply sympathetic with the Catechism's contents, and the priests and religious. Only God knows how many there are. In any case, this Catechism will certainly be the Rubicon that will divide those who still call themselves Catholic and those who may call themselves Catholic but no longer really are. I may have shared this with you in one of our last classes in the spring. The official text, called in Latin Editio Typica, of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, will be published in Latin. Originally planned for 1995, Holy Father decided that no, that will be too soon. In any case, it will be in about 4 or 5 years that the official Latin text of the Catholic Catechism, or better, Catechism of the Catholic Church, will be published by the Vatican. And one obvious reason is to see where, who, and how the Catechism in its present form will be accepted in secularized nations like America. And let me tell you, 25 years in working for the OVC, the United States is a secularized country. The United States is a mission country. The United States needs, as the present Holy Father keeps repeating to one cluster of bishops from America after another, keeps telling them, you've got to re-evangelize, re-Christianize your dioceses. And that is not a hyperbole, no figure of speech. One of my joys in coming here is that I know I am speaking to people who have the faith. It strengthens my faith, and I hope I can contribute some little bit to strengthen your faith too. I've been asked to distribute, and suppose we each side don't get into the aisle, just pass them out. Don't get in the aisle, please. You're standing in front of the TV. Pardon me. There's being formed in Michigan, and the need for this nationally is and has been for years grave for generations, has been very successful in England. The Catholic Evidence Guild. In other words, this is to defend the faith, and it will then be just to know what I'm supposed to be doing. On September the 13th and October the 11th, there'll be a series, two to be exact, informing, and we hope the idea will spread to all the states in our country. Catholic Evidence Guild, a series of Catholic, or on Catholic evangelism, catechetics, by the way, catechist is spelled, pardon me, C-A-T-E-C-H. As a teacher, the first thing I always looked at in a paper is spelling. Catechetics and apologetics will be given September the 13th, Lobby E, which I think is here. And October the 11th, Lobby M, and the time is 7:30 to 9 p.m. The idea behind this, and this is again what Rome is encouraging the laity in a country like ours to do, to speak up and defend the faith. This can take a variety of forms, using the media, of course, getting time on radio and television, but also standing on street corners. How's that? And if need be, going from house to house. All I know is it began in England and has been phenomenally successful. Does anybody have a copy of this? Okay. So, September the 13th, which must be, is that this week?
Yes,
sir. What's today? The
11th.
So it must be 11, 12, 13, must be Tuesday. I must be free, otherwise I wouldn't have committed myself. And bring your friends. In so many ways, I think the havoc of the enemies of Christianity have worked, not just in our country, but throughout the world, has been at least in some measure due to the passivity of Catholics. We don't go around wielding, you know, well, a steel sword, or less steel, you know, a six shooter on each hip. The most powerful defense of the faith is the truth. And during my 3 years of teaching in high school, including U of D High School on 7 Mile, one of my wonderful jobs was training public speakers and especially debaters. It's a great experience. And having been on the stage for 6 years before entering the Society of Jesus is just putting that one's experience to good use. So much for that. I believe that you all have page 1 of the table of contents. Am I correct? It happens to be page 7 in the sequence of the manuscript. beginning with the prologue, there are no questions in the book on either the foreword or the general introduction, but the questions begin with a prologue. And there are 12 questions for the prologue. What I want to do today, whether we will finish, I would like to follow the sequence of time, because our next class is in church history, and we want to cover from 1517 to 1994. That's a lot of years. And the first page that you have received already for your church history are on the rise of Protestantism. And if you can imagine, we're going to limit ourselves to today's class for Protestantism. No, it wouldn't be me. I would, do please come back. But your homework will be to read the pages you've received, and a little more to show that you have done some reading and, pardon, thinking. Is it possible to read something without thinking? Is that possible?
Oh, yes.
Oh, well. Yeah. I think most American literature is written that way. You can read, entertain yourself, but you don't have to think. Suppose I do this first. I think it's worth doing. I put them on my first page, wherever you wish to put them. That's up to you. I would like to read the 12 questions that I have for the prologue. I repeat, the amount of contents here is oceanic. Here we have 12 questions just for the prologue. Imagine the questions for Article 1, Article 2, Article 3. I'll just give the question and that's all. First question, why did God create us? You might, if you wish, maybe use a reverse side or a blank page. Why did God create us? That's question number one. Number two, how do we come to know and love God? How do we come to know and love God? Number three, are we to hand on the gospel to others? Are we to hand on the gospel to others? Mind you, this is already in the prologue. If there is one thing that everyone who reads the catechism should both learn and put into practice, it is, hear it, the grave obligation of sharing the true faith with others. Third question, are we to hand on the gospel to others? Fourth, how do we pass on the gospel? How do we pass on the gospel? Question five, what is catechesis? What is catechesis? Question six, how is catechesis a form of education? How is catechesis a form of education? Number seven, what are the outstanding periods of catechetical history? one of the outstanding periods of catechetical history. And of course, this is the latest outstanding period. We need a catechism. Number 8, what is the purpose of the Catechism of the Catholic Church? What is the purpose of the Catechism of the Catholic Church? Which I keep now abbreviating as CCC. What is the purpose of the Catechism of the Catholic Church? Number 9, what is the basic structure? What is the basic structure of the Catechism of the Catholic Church? Number 9, what is the basic structure of the Catechism of the Catholic Church? Number 10, what is the special emphasis of the Catechism of the Catholic Church? What is the special emphasis of the Catechism of the Catholic Church? That is most important. The emphasis is very different. The emphasis, the doctrine is of course essentially the same, but the emphasis from, say, the Roman Catechism published toward the end of the 16th century after the rise of Protestantism. So, number 10, what is the special emphasis of the Catechism of the Catholic Church? Number 11, how is the Catechism of the Catholic Church to be adapted to different people? How is the Catechism of the Catholic Church to be adapted to different people? And it was in answer to question 11 that I took on myself, with Rome's encouragement, to come out with what then will be a volume on adapting to different people. Once you know what are the essential issues, you're not dealing with an ocean of matter. And for someone who spent a lifetime teaching theology, it helps to have someone go through this before you do, to choose and pick, or at least in that person's judgment, are the main crucial areas. And number 12, what is the basic principle for teaching the Catechism of the Catholic Church? What is the basic principle for teaching the Catechism of the Catholic Church? So much for the questions. I have 1:33. Is that about right time? Till what time do we go, by the way? 2:25. Then we have a break, is that it? Okay, thank you. Now we get into the questions which I've just listed as 12, covering the prologue. First question, why did God create us? Answer, the answers, by the way, are very concise. Give us some chance, as much as we have time for, to make comments on. And I would deeply welcome questions, comments, objections, as a matter of fact. Given the fact we will have both the Catechism of the Catholic Church and in time the manuscript that will be published within about 6 weeks. It is more important to know what you need to know than for me to cover a certain amount of predetermined material. Understand? So do I. I can use the verb beg you. Please do not make the questions too lengthy. They take time to read, and they also take extra time to answer. Try to make the question as short and to the point as possible. As many as you can ask, don't hesitate. And even, by the way, I will try to answer all the questions before we break up each time we meet. If I don't, I will try to answer the questions in other ways. There are a number of questions arising regarding the faith nowadays. The number is a legion. Questions that never came up before. For example, I brought with me, someone gave me a sample of a parish bulletin from a parish. I'm not sure whether it was Detroit or Lansing. But a long, glowing report on a priest. What wonderful work he is doing, especially for the poor. Then the closing paragraph, and Father so-and-so is living with his wife. And identifying even where he's living. As we see in Rome, Mamma Mia. That is not coincidental. To bring down priestly celibacy is a sworn avowed intention of many, especially those who are not faithful to their own celibacy. How well I know. Back to question one. Why did God create us? First, the answer in print. God created us to know and love Him with our whole heart, and thus come to share in His own divine happiness for all eternity. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And that, by the way, is the beauty of our faith. It is consistent. God created us to know and love Him with our whole heart, comma, and thus come to share in His own divine happiness for all eternity. What are we saying? We human beings have been created with a mind and a will. Unlike the rest of the visible creation, which does not have a mind or a will. We have a mind and a will to know and love God. And if, and in the measure of that, we know and love God, we're going to be happy. And my friends, that begins already on earth. Am I clear? I've met my share of unhappy people. The most unhappy have been the atheists. I told you about Dr. Paul Van Buren, remember? Here in Ann Arbor, because it's still, this is Ann Arbor. 3 days. He was one of the leading death of God theologians. What a misnomer. Catholics ask for evil time. He can talk to the student about the death of God. We want somebody to defend, well, the living God. So I was imported to defend God's existence. As a Christian, I let him talk first. Basic charity. And when my turn came, I said, Dr. Van Buren, I just hope you will not disappoint me. There were several thousand students in the audience. I have yet to meet an atheist who is intelligent enough to defend his atheism. I just hope, I sincerely hope, Dr. Van Buren, that you will not disappoint me, as so many have disappointed me over the years in the past. Poor Paul. By the third day, he was hanging on the ropes. And his closing speech were, "If I have the faith of heart, Father Harden, I become a Catholic tomorrow." So, it's not just happiness in heaven, here on earth. It works. There's knowing and loving God. Question number two. How do we come to know and love God? We come to know and love God by freely responding to the call of His divine Son, Jesus Christ, to the apostles whom He sent to preach the gospel to all nations. How do we come to know and love God? Shall I repeat myself?
Please.
We come to know and love God by freely responding to the call of His divine Son, Jesus Christ, through the apostles whom He sent to preach the gospel to all nations. Christ came to reveal Himself, but He chose 12 men, among whom was a Judas. And people ask me, could you give one plausible reason why among the 12 apostles there was a Judas? Oh, sure. To prepare the faithful for Judas's for the centuries to come. The worst enemies of the church over the centuries have been unfaithful apostate bishops. As I've told so many people, no heresy has ever succeeded without bishops. You got a heresy? Find a bishop to back you. Otherwise, you will die unknown. It is then through the apostles and their successors, the bishops, but always, of course, under the bishop of Rome. Notice what we're saying. If you don't know God, just plain know God and love Him, you need to know and love Jesus Christ. The human mind is so self-preoccupied unless the mind submits in faith to the teaching of Jesus Christ and the will submits in love to the directives and commandments of Jesus Christ. Nothing else will work. And if that is true, as it is true, and we have the knowledge and love of Jesus Christ, but believe me, that's an imperative, believe me, the most educated of us, the best informed about our faith, are like babbling babes to the towering mountain of wisdom that God has revealed in the person of His divine Son. One nominally Catholic university after another, courses from A to Z, and they give lip service to the teaching of, quote, religion. Oh, you know, that religion stuff. And often the one who teaches may not him or herself even be a faithful Catholic. And yet, there is no purpose in Catholic education. There is no Catholic school in the world deserving of the name Catholic unless it teaches Jesus Christ and what He revealed. Otherwise, the name Catholic is not just a misnomer. It is being used under false pretenses. Number three, are we to hand on the gospel to others? Yes, we have the duty to hand on the treasure of the gospel that we receive from the apostles and watch it, give our proposition, and their faithful successors over the centuries. Oh, that adjective. And their faithful. Pronounce the words very slowly. And their faithful successors over the centuries. How the church needs faithful successors of the apostles. She needs nothing, nothing more does the Catholic Church need, nothing more than faithful bishops, nothing more. 25 years of working with the Holy See has taught me a library. One thing I would put near the top. Pray and sacrifice for bishops. We have then the duty to hand on the treasure of the gospel. No one comes to believe by some kind of osmosis. We don't get the faith, say, by being nursed by our mothers. We get the faith from someone who has the faith and passes on the faith to us. As I've said so many times, even the sacrament of baptism is invalid. There is no sacrament of baptism without the faith. Somebody must believe. Either the one baptizing or the one who says, I want my baby baptized, like a Catholic mother with a baby who is dying at childbirth, and a Jewish doctor helping deliver the baby. Would you please baptize my baby? What do I do? Well, take a glass of water. He takes a glass of water. Now slowly pour the water over the baby's head and pronounce the words. So he pronounces the words. I baptize you. I baptize you. In the name of the Father. In the name of the Father. And of the Son. And of the Son. And of the Holy Spirit. And of the Holy Spirit. Is the baby validly baptized? Yes. Or because the mother has the faith. Somebody must have the faith, otherwise there's no baptism. Zero. And as by now we know, having received the virtue of faith and baptism, which we do, someone then who has the faith must nurture that faith, and that from infancy. By telling this young child about Jesus and Mary. Told this story, I'm sure, to most of you. Remember that woman in New York? The Jewish woman, Janet? Told by a psychiatrist. Remember that? You don't remember? No. Do you remember? Oh, that makes two. Okay. I was then living on 83rd Street in Manhattan. And this woman calls me up. I am Janet. Can I come over? Come over. So she came over. And she said, I am Janet. I am 55 years old. Man, a woman telling you that. Her first sentence. I am 55 years old. I've been going to a psychiatrist for 18 months. Couldn't sleep, couldn't eat. And the psychiatrist, also Jewish, after 18 months, I was going every other week and paying good money. Something like $50. either an hour, maybe even a half hour. And she was mad with a psychiatrist told me. He said, Janet, if you want to get over your psychological problems, you must become a Catholic. And Janet told me, I thought he needed a psychiatrist. But he stood his ground. Well, it turns out that Janet and her sister